You may be seated. We're going to jump in today to a brand new sermon series. We just finished, if you were with us, we did a summer series on Back to the Basics, and we just did a part extended on that the last few weeks on prayer. And I've really enjoyed talking about prayer with all of you. But we're going to move past that, and as we enter the next season, we're going to be taking the rest of the month of October to do something topically, and then we'll shift gears again in November. But for the next couple weeks, we're going to talk a little bit in church, a short, very short series on money that we are calling wallet wisdom. Wallet wisdom, that's the topic. And what we want to do here is what we are hoping to do is in this series is try to give you the tools and the support that you need to win with money. And the bottom line is that when we do this series, we are not, I know that for some people when they hear the church talk about money, they think the church is asking for money, and we are not. That we want nothing from you in this series, we want something for you. And so while I believe with all my heart that giving is a part of our lives and whatever you do for budgets and operate what I do, I think part of our financial rhythm should be giving. I believe in that, but that's not what this series is about at all. I'm sure it could be in any time you discuss, you know, how we handle our money that's there, but we're talking about your sake and we want something for you, not something from you. So we are looking forward to sharing what I hope will be some helpful content the next couple of weeks. Now, I'll be honest, we're going to take a couple different directions the next couple weeks. It's going to be very practical. And we're going to go one direction today and a different one next week and then the last week as well. And so mixing it up a little bit. But today's going to be very basic. And I worried about how basic it's going to be because I thought for somebody in this room, maybe you've done so well in this area of your life that this is not, it's like elementary perhaps for somebody. But I know that's not the majority of us. I know that's not the majority of people. So but my thought was if someone has really rocked it out when it comes to handling their money so well that they don't need anything we're going to say, I had a feeling in my spirit that they were going to be our biggest cheerleaders anyhow because they obviously know the importance of doing this right. And so I just spoke with confidence our first service today. And afterwards, I had a retired couple come to me and say to me, boy, we practice those principles, and I'm so glad. And they did not need it today, but they said, we believe that, and we're so glad to hear it passed on. So they affirmed my belief that if you've done this well, you know this is important, and you're cheering on. And if you're in a spot where maybe you don't know much about this, hopefully we're going to give you some very foundational ideas today to help get you going. Now, I also had the thought, in fact, in my prayer time this morning, I was talking to God a little bit about my concern because I know that I've been in the church world a very long time between being a preacher's kid and being a pastor myself for nearly 22 years. And people who go to church sometimes and are religious get really weird about what they think is a spiritual topic. And it'd be very easy for some people to think that talking about money is not a spiritual topic. We should know better, but it's not just this topic, it's plenty of things. Usually, if something doesn't settle right in my life, then I just dismiss it as not spiritual. And this could be one that feels a little removed from that. But I want to promise you, this is a very spiritual topic, and for our wholeness and wellness of your life and your freedom. In fact, you should know this, that in the Bible, in the Holy Scriptures, money is discussed and money is talked about more than almost any other topic. In fact, there are people who have done the deep research that I've never taken the time to add up the verses and count them out. There are people who've done that who claim that it's the most talked about topic in the Bible. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I know it's talked about a lot more than almost any other topic. So money matters because it is spiritual, because it affects the quality of your relationships. It affects your ability to give. It helps free you from anxieties if you're not focused too much on it and loving it, but also not having to worry about things that are handled irresponsibly on the other end. And so it's that balancing spot where we're able to live in a way our relationships are healthier. It's a very big topic throughout the scriptures from one end to the other. And so I'm confident of that. And I hope that it will help you, this series. So what we're going to do is we're going to lay out very different directions. Today, a very basic plan is all we're giving you, a basic plan. And in this plan, our hope is today that we can give you the tools to start a process that maybe can change the direction and course of your life. So I'm going to start with some words in the Bible spoken by a very incredibly wise person, a man named Solomon. Solomon was a king of Israel back about 3,000 years ago. And Solomon was regarded in his time for being an incredibly wise man. In fact, it's recorded that people from other nations of the world would come to Jerusalem to see King Solomon because of his wisdom. And even 3,000 years later, he's regarded as one of the wisest people to ever live. And one of the reasons why he's regarded that way, besides the fact that he was known for that at the time, is because Solomon also was used by God to pen wisdom literature that still speaks to us today. Like the book of Proverbs was mostly written, not entirely, but mostly written by Solomon. Ecclesiastes, written by Solomon, Song of Songs. And so we have these treasures from this man who was wise in his time, and his wisdom continues to help us today. And in the book of Proverbs, Solomon wrote largely to his children, trying to set them up for the future. And in this series, I'll be honest with you, we want to help all of us, and I want, no matter how old we get, I want to help all of us with finances, but I understand that the best person to talk to is the youngest of us, because the younger we can get this started, the better off we'll be down the line one day. And I believe that is so important. That someone once said about your financial, wisdom and plan, that the best time to start is yesterday, and the second best time to start is today. So if you didn't start yesterday, start today. We can't go back and change what happened before, but we can start where we are. And so if you're like me in your upper 40s and it feels like it's a little late in the game to do the ideal thing, that's okay. Better now than 5 years or 10 years from now. And if you're there, then better now than later. But the younger we are, the better chance you have to leverage this. I was going to tell you this illustration later in the service because it just came to me between services, but I'm going to jump in and do it now before we read the scriptures. One of our couples who was here in the early service, a retired couple, came to me after church and said, they were telling me a story where they did exactly what we're teaching today. They started early. In fact, for him, he started working. He was 12 years old and saving furiously. And at the end of saving at that age of life for a number of years, they got married and he had $8,000 to buy a house. Now, $8,000 doesn't sound like a lot, but when he got married, $8,000 was a whole lot more than $8,000 is today. They were able to buy their house and pay it off by the time they were just a couple years into marriage because they aggressively tackled it from there. And they had their first house paid for. And they've gone through ups and downs of life and unemployment and setbacks along the way and spots where you're praying to God that you can afford to buy 2-ply toilet paper. They went through all of that stuff because life happens. But they had a foundation that set them up for the future because they started early. And my fear is that, the younger we are, the more impactful decisions are, but we don't have the experience or wisdom to know how important it is yet. By the time we do, some time has passed and it's not prime time to do the wise thing anymore. So for young people, if I could just convince you to apply these principles, especially to your life. And if we're not quite as young anymore, the second best time to start is today. So Solomon was the wise king of Israel who wrote wisdom literature that we still read today in the scriptures, like the book of Proverbs. And he wrote to his children because he wanted them to have a good chance. And he wrote something in Proverbs chapter 27, and we're going to look at those verses together. Proverbs 27 and verse 23, he said, "Know the state of your flocks and put your heart into caring for your herds." Now, this is interesting because obviously the people were very, farming communities. In fact, Israel, before it was a nation, the people of Israel, the family of Israel, started as shepherds and farmers from the beginning. But even as the nation grew and they became more diverse, back in those days, that's how you made a living. Everyone, you kind of raised your food and grew your food. Everyone, that's what you did. You hopefully grew enough crops to eat and raised enough livestock to eat and hopefully enough to sell extra and make extra money for other things, and you had land. And that's just kind of how the world worked. It wasn't exactly in the same terms as today. They didn't. They thought in terms financially like this. And Solomon says to his audience, to his children, to all his audience, know the state of your flocks. Don't just think things are okay out there and suppose they're fine. Don't just shrug and say, well, the farmhands got it covered, I guess. It's probably okay. I glanced over it and it was okay. No, he says, know the state of your flocks and put your heart into caring for your herds. He explains, he says, for verse 24, for riches. Riches don't last forever. Some of us have experienced that. Things happen. Things can change on a dime. Riches don't last forever. And he says, especially to his children, and the crown might not be passed on to the next generation. I mean, you know, whether it's your wealth or your positions or power or influence or whatever you're counting on to take you to the bank, things can change. We've seen this in the world where people get rich young today in music, perhaps, or if they're talented, or Hollywood, or in sports, and make a lot of money. And sometimes they think they have a lot of time to make more later, and they spend foolishly, and then something happens to them. They get injured in sports, or something happens to set them off, and they're not making money, and they spent what they made, and they're broke, because you can't guarantee that what is working today will work tomorrow. Riches don't last forever, and positions and powers and opportunities vanish fast sometimes. And you can't count on what you're counting on today to be there later on. So Solomon goes on and he says, after the hay is harvested and the new crop appears and the mountain grasses are gathered in, okay, so again, terms they'd understand, hay, crops, gathering, harvesting. He says, your sheep will provide wool for clothing, because we need clothing, right? And your goats will provide the price of a field. In other words, not only will you have, you know, you got to eat and live indoors, but not only can you provide your needs, but also if you do this right, you can afford to maybe buy some property to do better for yourself, to expand for your future, if you'll do the right thing the right way. And then he puts the coup de grace, the final statement to summarize and make the punch work. But in verse 27, he says, and you will have enough goat's milk for yourself, your family, and your servant girls. That is weird, I'm sorry. But apparently that's the selling point. Apparently at the end of the whole conversation, that's like, okay, if you haven't bought anything else I had to say, this right here, okay? I mean, you know, you've got your food, you got clothing, you'll be able to buy some fields, and most importantly, goat's milk for you, yourself, and your servant girls. So, understandably, again, the culture is different. When we read something from 3,000 years ago in modern times, we have to interpret this and understand he was speaking to them about how they handled their affairs. I think that if Solomon was alive today with all his wisdom and could live in the 21st century, in a day, an age where things are very different in Western culture and how things are, we're a very wealthy nation, but we usually compare ourselves to other wealthy people so we don't feel so wealthy, and how we handle, how we operate in this economy and how we take care of ourselves and look ahead. I think Solomon might word it differently if he was alive today in 21st century America. Solomon today might say something like this. He might say, know how much money is in your accounts. I think there's some in there. Yeah, I took a glance. It's pretty good, last I saw. Know how much money is in your accounts. Where it went. Where did it go? I don't know where it went. And where it's going. Before it goes, know where it's going, you know. Value. That's a good word. Value. What you have, enough to pay attention to it. Valued enough to pay attention to it. Nothing, he would say, nothing lasts forever. The job you have today may not be there tomorrow. You could have a pandemic hit the worldwide and you may have layoffs. I mean, right, we've experienced crazy things this year. He could have just said, insert 2020 right here, you know. I mean, nothing lasts forever. What you're counting on today might be gone tomorrow. Solomon might go on and say this. He might say, once you've put in the work and you follow the plan, your investments can provide security for your future. And then he might close by saying, and you will have enough goat's milk for yourself, your family, and your servant girls, okay? So take comfort in that. Now listen, here's, I want to be real practical. One of the secrets to financial freedom, one of the secrets is to have a plan and follow it. And we're going to be, okay, we're going in one specific direction today, but it's so important. Have a plan and follow it. Now there's a lot of good financial plans. I've been pastoring for nearly 22 years soon, And before that, I actually did some financial counseling while I was in college. Looking back, I had no business because there's a lot I didn't know. I knew enough to say, here's how far I am. And then there's things I didn't know yet and I learned later. Some things I learned the hard way later. But I've been involved in the understanding and in helping people, including myself sometimes, figure this out for a long time now. And through the years, we've taught different things. But, oh, I don't know, it had to be 12 or more years ago, more than that, I can't even be sure. We came across Financial Peace University, which is Dave Ramsey's financial plan. And it was not that he had any original content. That sounds so horrible to say. He had great stuff. He took a lot of great wisdom that we already had out there, and he packaged it really, really well into a plan. And we saw it was so good and so well packaged that we began to teach it and present it. In fact, we've offered Financial Peace University courses through our years many times over. Some of you in this room have taken a Financial Peace University class at our church in the years past. And in fact, when I do premarital counseling, one of the things I require couples to do before we do their wedding is to take a financial peace class together for 9 weeks to establish them well, because it's a good plan. It's not the only plan, but it's a really good plan. And I want to kind of share with you the 7 baby steps. In fact, we're going to share 7 baby steps today of Dave Ramsey's plan, because you need a plan. Now, if you have a different plan, that's great. And this is a very unique lesson today, but I want to give these to you because if you've heard them before, you know how important it is. If you're following them, you definitely know how important it is. And if this is brand new to you online or in person and you've never heard it today, you can get started. So here's what I want you to do. Take screenshots of each of these steps and write them down. Or just take your paper and pen and write them down if you don't do screenshots. But write these steps down, and I want you to figure out where you are and what's next for you. So write these down, take a picture, whatever you got to do, and figure out what's next for you in the baby steps. But here's the thing about a plan. I don't care if it's a different plan. You need a plan, and you need to follow the plan. I was talking to... We all know people like this. Anthony, who's in the audio video room making online possible, and I were talking earlier about a person we know dearly, who is like so many others about dieting. Don't get mad at me about dieting. I'm just telling you a story. The person who they always find a new fad diet. Oh, this diet's amazing. I know someone who lost 85 billion pounds on this diet, and this is great. And so they start this diet, but within a week of starting the diet, they're like, well, you know, it's a good plan, but I think if you altered it this way and added this and let yourself do that, and they alter the diet plan. And then they wonder why it never works, you know? And so then they try another fad diet, and then they alter that plan a week later, and they're doing something different. And then they're like, well, these plans just don't work. Well, of course they don't work. You don't follow the plan. And so you need a plan, and you need to follow it. Now, if there's a better plan out there than the one we're going to give you as far as baby steps towards the right thing, then follow it. But follow it. And I think that don't reinvent the wheel. If you've got a good one, stick with it. So here's 7 things, and I'm going to give them to you, and we're going to go home after some closing thoughts. Step number one is this. Save $1,000 into an emergency fund. Save $1,000 into an emergency fund. This is so important to start with. This is before anything else. Why is this important? It's important because here's what happens. We really want to get you out of debt. If you have credit card debt, student debt, whatever kind of debt you have, we want to get you out of debt. But one of the things, because debt is a killer. We'll talk about debt momentarily, but debt is just, it just keeps you in bondage. It keeps you under. It keeps you on the losing side of the economy all the time. That's what debt does. But one of the big reasons people get into debt is because they get into emergencies. And they say, I got to borrow the money on a credit card to pay for it because it's an emergency. And so if I can convince you to, as fast as possible, set aside a $1,000 emergency fund, you have a little emergency fund thing that you don't turn to plastic. But what happens is we don't have this. And so even when you're young, you're like, well, I'm making some money so I can spend the money. I'm making some money so I can go out to eat more. And I'm making some money so I can buy a little nicer. I'm making more money, I can buy nicer stuff. And then all of a sudden, without having previously thought it through, a car breaks down. The refrigerator goes out. You know, fill in the blank. Something happens and like, oh no, I didn't plan for that. I was living on what I made, and then an emergency happens, so we borrow ourselves into a hole, and compound interest is another conversation momentarily. Bottom line is this. One of the ways to get us out of the mess is to start by putting $1,000 into an emergency fund, and that becomes our net in case something goes wrong. And then if it goes wrong and you use it, you replenish it right away as soon as you're able to do so for the next emergency. But this is step one, and this is a very, people don't skip this step. if you're starting the plan. Number two, pay off all your debt, accept your mortgage using the debt snowball. We're not going to discuss the debt snowball today. We will discuss it before we're done, but it's a five-minute conversation. It's like it's so easy a caveman can do it. It's not hard. We'll explain it to you and you're like, oh, okay. So we'll get there, but pay off all your debt using the debt snowball, accept your mortgage. Why accept your mortgage? We're going to get to the mortgage later, but all your other debt, the thing about debt is it's ridiculous. Most debts, credit card debts especially, sometimes run about 20% or sometimes higher in interest rates. And let me say something about interest. It's the most powerful tool. People like Warren Buffett and others who have made themselves ridiculously rich have done it through investing, and they'll say over and over again, they'll preach the virtue of investing your money in a place where it's going to bring returns. It's just what happens. Your interest, you make interest, and here's how interest works. You make a little bit when you're investing, and then it doesn't look like much, but then now you're making interest again on what you made before, plus the interest you made, and so it goes slowly. But after a while, it builds some fast momentum, and before long, you're getting a little progress until you start getting huge progress, and over time, it's one of the wonders of the world. Compound interest in your favor is amazing. The problem is most of us are in compound interest against us. We're paying off debts. So we're paying for things that sometimes you pay double or more for over the course of a loan because of interest. And that's why the banks have all the nice buildings and people are wealthy and we're struggling. Most Americans, our nation's in debt, and our individuals in our nation are in bad debt because debt is not considered a bad thing. And so we are on the wrong side of compound interest and it's killing our future. So pay off all your debt. And I mean, get ferocious about it. Get some tenacity about it and pay it off as fast as you can. Tackle this thing and get it behind you. It's a big step. I don't have time to get into it any more than that today. Number three, put 3 to 6 months of expenses into savings. What that means is this. That means that you put some money, this is beyond step one, that $1,000 emergency fund. This is a fund so that if you lose your job to the economy or something goes sour wrong, you have something to sit back and buffer you between desperation and, you know, what's next. Put some money aside to buffer you there. 3 to 6 months of expenses. Now, notice the word expenses. I didn't say 3 to 6 months of income, because here's why. Your income and your expenses are two different numbers. In fact, I don't think I should have to say this, but because I'm speaking to, you know, all ages, I want to say this in case someone needs to hear this. It's very important. Your income needs to be bigger than your outgo, obviously. If your income is not bigger than your outgo, you're in trouble, right? If your income's not bigger than your outgo, you're losing money. Here's the thing. If your outgo is bigger than your income, you're going into credit card debt. You're spending money you don't have. But if your income is bigger than your outgo, you're able to set aside, you're able to pay the debt down. And the more you can stretch, that means that when your income goes higher because you get a raise, what most Americans do is we say, ooh, I have more money, I have more needs, I have more money, I need extra stuff. And if we can keep our expenses down to the needs that we had when we didn't have much money, as the income goes up, the bigger the gap between our income and our expenses is our ability to leverage wealth for our future. It's our ability to get rid of debt. It's our ability to move into a space where we're able to let money work for us instead of working against us. So income's got to be higher than outgo or you're in trouble anyhow. So once you pay off your debts in step two, your expenses are way lower. If you've lived a simple life, your expenses are way lower. And therefore, if you lose your job, you don't need 3 to 6 months of income to survive. You just need 3 to 6 months of expenses because you've had more coming in than you needed. And you just got to figure out how we can get by for a few months. So pay that debt off first. I know people who believe doing this before you pay off your debt, but most of this kind of money right here is put into a bank with a 1.7% interest rate that's pathetic. This kind of money is fast, easy access, desperation money. You don't want to do that while you're paying credit card interest on debt. Pay off your debt first. Get the debt gone first. In fact, but the best security, Glenn, you'll give yourself in having a cushion is to get out of the monster of debt and feel that weight lifted off. My chains are gone. I've been set free, you know. Just let that go away. And then pile some things away for later. So here's what I'm saying. Follow the plan. Step one, $1,000 emergency fund. Step two, pay off all your debts except your mortgage using the debt snowball. Number three, put 3 to 6 months of expenses into savings for those times when you lose the job and you're trying to buy 2-ply toilet paper. Okay? Step four, and then, by the way, I'm going to stop here and say this. Step four, five, and six all go together. One, two, and three are linear, one after the other. But once you get past step three, four, five, and six can work together. Step four is this. Start investing 15% of your household income into longer-term investments. Bonds, mutual funds, index funds, ETFs, things that are smart and, you know, well-advised and invest your money. Now, you say, why not do that earlier? Why not do that at the beginning? Here's why. Because we said pay off your debts first except for your house. Because the truth is that you could get lucky on your returns on investments. You can get lucky with it. But the truth is that I think your index funds have averaged 20 years, about 7 to 8% interest over the course of ups and downs of the market over the last 20 years. You know what I'm saying? So to put your money in something that can earn you hopefully 10% interest while you're paying like 20% interest on credit cards is a losing strategy. Get rid of the debt first, fast, so that you can have, you know, because that's a bigger interest rate against you. But your house mortgage is probably lower. Someone the other day told me they got an interest rate for like 3.5% for their house. I mean, they're really low right now. Hopefully you can get yours refinanced and get it low. So your house is much lower than the average index fund return. So once you have your debts paid off, which are bad, you can tackle these steps four, five, and six together, including starting to put 15% away into the future. Now, I'm going to say this right now, and maybe young people, please hear me. To our young audience online or in person, hopefully you never have to do step two. You never get into debt. Someone told me earlier that they spent 50 cents in their entire life ever on interest because they just have avoided debt at all costs, and they're older than me. That's awesome. That's a recipe for success. Stay out of debt. Skip baby step two to start putting away expenses for a rainy day. But here's the thing. If you're young and you can get to step four fast, I don't have time in this message today to make this point loud enough to you. I'm going to try to make it for the next 2 minutes here. Please hear me. The earlier you do this, the better off you'll be. Because again, progress starts slow and it looks marginal, but at some point as it gets bigger, it starts growing exponentially, but it doesn't move that way for a long time. So the later you start this, the worse off you are, which means it's the 12-year-old guy I told you about earlier. If I could get kids who are 18, 19, and 20, 22 to do this right here with their smaller incomes, then as they make more money someday, they keep putting 50% of whatever they're making away still. And as their income grows, they keep doing that, and they keep doing that. By the time you're 38 years old and 45 years old, I'll probably be gone, but you'd thank me or you thank whoever told you that 1,000 times over because you're done. You're good. You're in a position to make a difference in the world with your time and your money in ways that no one else can because you did the hard work young. The problem is we get to know that when we get older, but when we're young, we don't see why this is important. But if you'll follow that advice and do that, you'll be grateful someday. I promise you that. Now, number five is this, save for college expenses. If you can help your kids, maybe you don't have enough money, maybe you didn't do this early enough in life, or you just couldn't, but if you could help your kids when you're young by preparing ahead of time to help them with this, you'll save them. Two things that frustrate me in this world today, the expenses of college, financially, college expense is ridiculous, and number two, medical expense is ridiculous. Those things need to be reformed in our economy desperately because they're burying people left and right, and it shouldn't be that way. And we live in a first world developed nation. We got to fix the medical industry. We got to fix the college expense industry. But until we do, it's what it is. Save for your kids if possible. Number six, all these are at the same time. Once you get past three, do one first, then two, then three, and then four, five, and six go together. Start putting 15% away into long-term investments and pay off your house as early as possible. Pay that thing down. After the 15%, find any other margin you have, tackle this baby here, own your house free and clear. What a peaceful feeling that will be when it's off. And people say weird stuff. I heard someone one time say, no, you can't pay off your house because you get a mortgage exemption on your taxes, and you don't want to lose the mortgage exemption, you'll pay higher taxes. And I'm like, really, listen to me. The mortgage exemption that you're saving by having a mortgage does not save you as much as the compound interest you're spending on your mortgage. In debt, it's bad math. Just get out of debt and deal with a mortgage exemption some other day, you know? Please. And then if you do those things in that order, number seven is this, build wealth and give. Build wealth and give. This is where we want you to be. I would love to see Christian people be as wise as they have been in ancient times, where they've gotten themselves to a spot where they are free enough because they followed a plan early enough in life for it to be work for them younger than it will for many of us. To where they're in a spot in when they're my age to be able to go where they're called to go without saying I can't because I have to work, or they're able to give where they want to give because without saying I can't because of my bills, and they can take the time they want to take because they've earned it because they put the work in the front end and it pays off the back. And the problem is when we're young, we think these are the best years of my life. These are the years to do what I want to do. And then someday we don't leverage our future in a spot to be generous with our time and our wealth and live in a way that will bring us joy down the line. So if you're young and you'll follow this plan, you'll be the best beneficiaries of this. And if we're not so young and we didn't know the plan or didn't follow the plan, the second best time to start is today. That's the plan that Dave Ramsey gives. Now, here's what I want to say to you. If you got a better plan, cool. Follow the plan. Don't cheat the diet with supplementing it with other ideas. Take a good plan and work it. And that's a good plan. So what do we do right now? A couple things before we go home. First of all, I want to say this. Relationally, you got to get on the same page. I want to say something about relationships for a moment. Many of you are married or hoping to be married one day. And it's important that when you're in a relationship with somebody else, that you're on the same page. It's hard to make life work when you're not. It's a very important relationship. By the way, can I tell you something from my 22 years of pastoring experience that I know to be true? That the number one cause of marriage troubles is money troubles. And if I could be so bold as to say this, in my experience, of all the other causes of marriage troubles, they're usually exacerbated, or whatever, by money troubles. In other words, a couple who has other kinds of marriage problems are managing those tensions, and they're managing those tensions, and they're making it work somehow. But then you throw money problems on top of that other problem, boom, it just explodes. Money problems make all the other problems way worse. It is a relationship killer. And if you want to know how spiritual this is, God cares about your relationships, and if we don't have a plan, that's why we need a plan. But relationally, get on the same page, because there's nothing harder than when one spouse is trying to save and the other one's spending under them. One's got a goal and a plan, the other's undermining the plan. It's just hard to get ahead when you're not on the same page. You've got to be on the same plan. I can't tell you how valuable it is. Every couple, if you're married, and before you're married especially, but if you're married, you ought to get alone, couples, together. Go away for a weekend annually. Do something. If you have kids, lock them away and go somewhere anyhow. I don't know what you got to do, but go away and spend some time and dream together. Every married couple ought to sit down and say, what is our dream? And you got to dream ahead together. And every married couple ought to sit down together and say, what are our goals? What do you want to see achieved in your life and in your life? And figure out what those goals are. And then they ought to say, okay, those are your goals. These are my goals. How can we reach our goals? And put a plan that will get you to your goals. I'll tell you this, a couple would dream and put goals together, and put a plan to reach their mutual goals, and work that plan together on the same page, they will get closer than you can imagine. Because working together, in fact, what you'll find if you'll do that, is that the destination is awesome, but the journey's even better. Because you're close working together for the same goals, with the same plan, it's magic. That's some great relationship advice. But you gotta be on the same page as your spouse. This is important because this is a major cause of trouble. Get on the same page about what your plan is. Get a plan, agree to it together, figure what that means, work it together to get where you're going. Now, I'm just going to say something else. If you're dating, make sure you align on this. This is vital. I had like a 11-year-old in the earlier service, and they were nodding their head real big to this point. I'm like, okay, cool. Hope you believe that when you're 18, you know. But here's the thing. This is important before you get married. I can't tell you. To me, dating, and this is not a dating message, but let me throw some dating things out here. Dating should be this series of hurdles that someone's got to clear all of them in order for you to marry them. And there needs to be hurdles in front of you that they have to clear. One of them should be, are they a Jesus follower? If you're a Christian and they're not a Jesus follower, they don't classify, this is done. I wouldn't want to be with somebody if we're not, our values aren't aligned on that basic level. But just because someone passes that hurdle, there are other hurdles to hurdle, besides the fact that they have cute eyes. You know, cute eyes are great, but that's not the most important thing on the list. The question is going to be, you know, are you on the same page? If you're with somebody and they're like, well, you know, I just don't think it matters. You don't have to, do you really have to work at all? I don't know. I'm just going to figure it out. The system will take care of us. I don't want to. Oh. Run, okay? Debt's no big deal. I'll just have it. Someone else will pay for it someday. Run. Oh, I don't pay attention to those kind of things. Listen, to bring up a plan, get a plan and figure it out. And you say, yeah, but they're so, her smile's so pretty. It won't look so pretty when she's smiling and you're in a bad spot because you are fighting about being on a different page. Yeah, but his hair is so wavy. It'll fall out, okay? But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Don't let that be the reason that you make a bad decision. Look, 50 years is a long time to be yoked with somebody that you're not on the same page with. So dating is the time to vet people. Dating is the time to sit there and say, there's a thousand, are we compatible? Okay, we're not. Hey, there's 8 billion people in this world. I'm going to find somebody who also has wavy hair and a pretty smile who we on the same page. Okay? So make sure that you have hurdles in there, checking them all. And if they're not in the same, if they don't have the same plan, same goals, same values, man, just do yourself a favor. Or, you know, get some counsel later when it's too late because you made a promise. But think on the front end. Because here's why. Bible verse, Amos chapter 3, ancient Hebrew scripture, Amos the prophet once wrote, can two people walk together without agreeing on the direction? That doesn't work very well, right? It doesn't work very well on the street. It doesn't work anywhere. It's hard to walk with somebody who doesn't agree on the direction. That's a good metaphor for life, for relationships. So before you decide to tie in with somebody and try to walk someplace and you're pulling in opposite directions with the same rope, figure out that you're going the same direction and on all the important things. You'll have to figure a lot out. Relationships are complicated, but make sure the big stuff is in line and you have the same plan. When it comes to finances, make sure that you both agree. What are your dreams, goals, and plan to get there? Are you of the same values? And if not, save yourself a lot of heartache and jump out. That was bonus, that was free. Okay, now, one piece of advice again for you before we go home shortly. Start paying attention to your finances. There's a lot of people out there saying, I don't know why I'm broke. I mean, I look at my budget and I think I have the money in the bank and I have two more checks coming before the next bill's due. And so I should have all this money before then so I can afford to go do this. And then I'm always broke at the end of the month. I don't know why. Start paying attention to your finances. Like, this could change everything. Now, I know why we don't do this. Because when we look at the details, we get depressed. When we look at the details, we get overwhelmed. But here's the thing. You can be in the top of the boat as the captain, and someone could say, hey, the boat's sinking underneath. I don't want to go down there and see. That's depressing, right? You got to get into the mess and get freaked out and stressed out to fix it. And so if your finances are not in order, don't just sit there and say, I don't want to look at them because it's depressing, blinders, Find out what's going on. I heard someone give someone advice that was, actually it was Dave Ramsey talking to a couple who couldn't figure out why they were in trouble. And he said, look at where you're spending. And they figured out that they were sitting down at the table one day, figuring out why the money is never working the way they thought it was supposed to by what was coming in. And all of a sudden they heard the doorbell ring, and the Amazon Prime package was on the door. And they thought to themselves, so they went back and added up their Amazon Prime deliveries for the last month. And they're like, oh, times 12 for the year? Yeah, that's where it's going. Right? I dealt with a couple about 12 years ago who they were struggling with smoking, and they both had nicotine habits, and they wouldn't stop, and that was fine, but I was talking to them, and one day I was helping them financially. I'm like, look, let's add up the cost of your cigs. And they figured out what they spent in 4 weeks, times 13 more sets of 4 weeks for a year, and they saw the price tag, and they're like, okay, we're stopping, and they stopped. It's amazing how that worked. But here's the thing. It would do a lot of people a lot of good to actually go back and figure out how much you ate out in the last 5 weeks. How much you spent at restaurants and fast food or Target. Pay attention to where your money is at, where it's going, where you want it to go, and you might have an idea of what needs to be fixed. I know it's depressing, but it's the only way to change. Sometimes it's the stress that comes from looking that gives us the motivation and fuel we need to do something better. Now, I'm going to give you one last statement on the screen. If this was basic for you, hopefully you're saying, yes, do this, people, this helped me. Or maybe if you've forgotten or you're starting over or you're starting for the first time, where do we begin today? Start with step one. Save $1,000 in an emergency fund. If you've done that already, take the next step. But for a lot of us, this will be step one for us today. Here's what I want to say to you about this. There are people in this room, you could do this in 1 week. You could shift some things around. You could make some things happen. You could do it in a week if you tried hard. Others of you, it'll take longer. But tenaciously and furiously go after step one and get it done. Lots of reasons for that. Now, I'm telling you, if you do step one, you're set up to do step two. In fact, sometimes the easiest way to continue a plan is to start it. Once you get one thing accomplished, you're like, well, I'm already step one. I'm already making progress. Let me continue the journey. So if you'll do this one thing, you'll give yourself the motivation to continue the plan. And for some of you, you could do this really fast. I mean, maybe it's hard, but maybe it's, you have one income in the family, the other one needs to get a part-time job. Or maybe someone who works needs to get a side hustle for a short time, just for a short time to do this. Or maybe somebody else just needs to get on eBay, sell something, sell a car, sell a kidney, sell a kid. No, don't do that. Sell something and find it, okay? But you can get here if you'll get after it. Start with step one. As fast as you can do that, you're on a journey now that can change the direction and course going forward. And if you'll do this, if you'll take a plan to heart, listen to the words of Solomon and others in the Bible, take a plan to heart, put it in place, follow it, get on the same page with your spouse or your spouse-to-be, work together, pay attention to the details, and start the journey, you'll be glad one day. You won't have the stress that distracts you from saying, I really want to serve God, but I'm distracted by the things of this life, not because I should be living for this life, but because I have been. See, people will sometimes say, Arlen, you can't preach this way because we shouldn't be loving money and we shouldn't be, you know, worried about this stuff. We should be worried about God. Here's the thing. It's such a bait and switch argument. Because I'll tell you what's carnal. Carnal is not saving money and making sure that you're doing things responsibly. Carnal is saying, who cares, spend, do, and then wondering why we're crushed under this world because we've been living irresponsibly. So here's what I want to say. Don't love this world so much that you're living without wisdom. Put yourself in a spot to where you can be free from the bondages of money and expenses and things till your time and your money is freed up someday to make a difference in the world, to do what you want to do because you put a plan in place and you worked it. And if you'll do that, I tell you, you'll be thankful one day to someone who told you to do so and you listen to them. And you'll be better off. And you'll be free. And you'll have enough goat's milk for yourself, your family, and your servant girls, or so they say. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I pray that you would just help us to just believe with all of our hearts today that something that you speak about in Scripture so much would be something that must matter, that we would take it seriously, that it would not overpower our lives to be too big of a part of our lives, but that it would not be an insignificant part of our lives that we pay no attention to. Help us to get going. Give us wisdom. Bless those who take steps. Bless their efforts. Help us to figure this out, we pray. Thank you for every person that came out today on this day. As we move into some worship for a few minutes here, I pray that we would just take a few moments here to just lean into you and your goodness. But help us, Lord, to take the wisdom of your word today and apply it to heart today in the next couple weeks. Make a difference for us, we pray. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.